fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
So good. So good.
You got it made.
What's that?
So good. You got it made.
Yeah, so good. I got it made. We got whiskey.
We have.
Which is different. We haven't had whiskey in a couple weeks anyway. A week.
Not on the microphone.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I got a bottle that I first heard of last year, I think. And what?
The nose evolution is interesting.
Yeah, I first heard of this bottle last year, and it was elusive. I mean, I think incredibly elusive. I think that this year it's been a little bit easier to come by for some people, but I finally found a bottle of Penelope Rio. So this is it's a finished booze by Penelope.
Penelope, I think is how you say that word.
Penelope. It is finished in, so this is Penelope's 4-grain mash bill, which I believe is an MGP spirit. Aged half in honey and half in Amburana barrels. And so I brought it over for Andrew. Sometimes I have a whiskey and I'm like, probably better bring that over. This is one of those times. It is a horchata flavored bourbon. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they don't claim that, but I claim horchata.
So right off the bat, like on the fresh nose, like super pineapple-y, like really tropical fruity, and we're 90 seconds post pour, like brown sugar coconut.
You don't get horchata. You don't get any cinnamon.
I do. That's like the entire flavor profile cinnamon. Of horchata.
Yeah,
I don't get a lot of cinnamon. I get like Cinnamon Toast Crunch sweetness.
I get milkiness too, which is the thing I think is the most like,
I get a lot of coconut. I'm going to give it another minute. But it's exciting. I'm happy to.
It's almost not bourbon. It's clearly a finished bourbon, which makes it bourbon.
Like you get this at 7-Eleven on a little pull tab.
Right. This is almost not. I mean, it's hard to, like, I get very little bourbon off the palate. It is delicious, though. It is absolutely fantastic. Andrew, I'm good. How are you?
I'm also good. It's been it's just hectic. We had two kids, sports, yard work. I mowed my lawn on Saturday, and I already have to mow it again.
Yes, tis the season.
That's trash.
Tis the season.
But all my baby grass that I put down in my bald spots in my backyard is taking nicely.
Oh, nice.
So I think by the end of summer, I will have forgettable bald patches.
If you keep it wet, man, you gotta overseed in spring and fall, man.
I know, but I think I will get to the end of summer and be ready for another heavy layer of seed and just finally have restored my backyard.
Your backyard?
Yeah, because I had this little girl dog who every time she peed, she liked to pee in three places in the yard. And then we'd do that stupid scratch and just fucked up those three big spots in my yard.
R.I.P. Lucy.
Well, you know, yeah. Yeah, that she was a very good dog, but she was not good for yards. She was not good for yards. But yeah, so just, you know, chugging on along. Very excited to get into this bourbon. And took the kid to gymnastics today. We did a schedule swap, so I went to gymnastics, which is just wild, right? So we have this big gymnastics academy in town, and they have like one half of the warehouse is like kids classes, and then the other half of the warehouse is competitive kids. And to watch these like probably 12 to 17 year old boys and girls do the things that they do It's like worth the price of admission. Like, I don't watch my kid during gymnastics. I just turn my body and watch these kids fly through the air and do things that, like, my body hurts watching them do the things yeah, that they're doing.
It's pretty impressive.
It is just wild. And like the exhibition of just raw strength and power in launching yourself off of the earth in such a controlled manner is super fun to watch.
Yeah.
There was like a group of probably like 13 to 15 year old boys doing their pommel vault thing. Holy shit.
Yeah. A lot of athleticism there.
Like, they were in the air longer than I can hold my breath.
I don't like that place because it smells like athlete's foot.
My snot locker is not super effective.
I don't know what athlete's foot smells like, but it smells like that place.
I don't let, because there's birthday parties there for both of our kids' ages. So when the first thing they do when they come in the house, they're like, I'm so tired. I want to get on the couch. I'm like, you are not taking your foot juice body and touching the couch or blankets. If you want to stand and watch television, fine. But you are touching nothing until you have showered.
That I think that's fair. That place is real stinky.
It does have a funk, and it's an enormous warehouse, and I don't think that funk comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's permanent. In any event, we're here to talk about watches and not funky gymnastics.
Odors.
Rather, we're here to talk about watches. Andrew, just this once, do you want to lead us off?
I think I will. Two things. I want to start with a brief not thing that I want to talk about. Studio Underdog had a really fun April Fool's Day announcement on their straps three ways, like tri-wrist and bicep and hat wrist and all their manner of stuff. And reading it and viewing it, it was the perfect April Fool's Day prank because it could have just as easily been real. And I would have felt exactly the same way of like, well, that's weird. But also, like, you can't push the envelope without occasionally knocking something over. Right. Yeah. It was the perfect April Fool's Day. And I was like, this can't be real. And then there was nothing about it after, which meant that it was not a thing. So good on the team over there. Well executed April Fool's efforts. Now, we're 7 days in, six and some hours. Actually, we're over 7 days in.
To what?
To the Artemis II mission. So
they're heading home now.
Artemis II has completed their trip past and around the moon and is on their way back. And I read a Fratello article shortly after launch that outlined the watches that are on board the Artemis II in their trek. And this, so all the astronauts have their X-33, right? Because that's their issued watch. They also have a Speedmaster Pro, a Moonwatch for their EVAs. I don't know why, and I need to look into that if perhaps, like, if there's something about the digital watch that would be problematic in the vacuum of space, but they all also have their moon watches for spacewalking.
Andrew, this is why do the Ninja Turtles eat Domino's pizza instead of some other kind of pizza? This is all about product placement.
Okay, so here we are. So those are the Omega provided watches. These astronauts all brought their own shit along too, in the way of like not provided by NASA, right? They're all of them have a Navitimer with them, but there's one special watch that is.
I wonder if they all just independently went out and bought. No,
there is one special watch that is worth mentioning, and Christina Cook has her father's Speedmaster Moonwatch on board with her.
That's kind of dope.
Yes.
That's kind of dope.
So everyone's been provided these watches, right?
They if my kid went to space, I'd be like, hey, take this with you.
Take anything. Like, you want one of my socks? Do it. But she has her dad's Speedmaster.
That's dope.
On a moon flight. and is bringing it home, and hopefully we'll give it back to Dad, and not eBay it or some crazy shit. But yeah, I it was interesting to look down the product placement line. It was like, okay, everyone has an X33, everyone has a Moonwatch. Interesting that they're also all provided Navitimers. Yeah. Way to go, Breitling. Good job getting your placement in there, because it immediately made me say, well, that's the watch that the astronauts wanted to bring to the moon. So that's the watch that I need to get. That's where my head went, and I was immediately on Chrono 24 again. I'm like, no, you fucker. You just want one because they're awesome, not just because Breitling gave four away to the Artemis crew.
I mean, it could be both, right?
Well, they're not all aviators, right? There's no like distilling down why they all have a Navitimer, right? If they were all aviators and they all like the Navitimer was the watch that they'd been flying with for however long, okay, I buy, I accept, as not Breitling gave these to us to wear in product placement photographs before we put on our spacesuits. That's what it is. There's no thread that you can join all these people at. Besides, you know, being astronauts for a while, right? That none of them are like brand new to the program. They've all been at NASA for a long time, and perhaps maybe that's a personal watch favorite of astronauts. I don't know, but my assumption is that Breitling gave them Navitimers to take to the moon.
Yeah, no, that's my... That's
and I want guess. An Navitimer still, and did before, but want one more now.
Yeah. And notably, these are the quote-unquote cosmonaut Navitimers. So, no, it's a rad setup. I think, you know, given the opportunity, I'd
load a case of watches.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Everything. You want to see a Santos on the moon? We can make it happen. We can't. I'd like to see one on the moon. And if you're going anytime, I will loan you mine.
Andrew, I'm gonna quickly, just because I feel like sometimes I'm like, I don't care. And sometimes I'm like, I want to get this right. I am going to Google the pronunciation of a word I start this. here we go.
Nobody can even read that. Well, you're just going to have Google say it. Smart.
Yeah. Kambu. Say it again.
Kambu.
Thank you. Kambu is what I heard.
I heard more A.
Kambu?
I heard like closer to that, but like Kambu.
Albashorn. Albashorn.
Oh, it's just one of my favorites.
I think... collectively one of our favorites since they came out swinging in 2024. Albashorn, if you don't know, is the watch brand who makes
up their story.
Absolutely, yes, who makes up their story, who makes these absolutely rad watches that are ostensibly or theoretically could be based on a historical watch. The carpet being pulled, however, though, is that the historical watch does not exist.
Yes.
So they are coming up with a watch. The story is to come up with a watch that existed in the past and to release a modernization of that. They're like the zombie company that only recreates catalog watches that don't exist.
They're like creating Frankenstein's monsters. They're not actual zombies. They're like creating the monster without it having it. We don't have a good analogy.
So
we're really struggling.
That's right. I mean, it's such a bizarre, like, and you know, there's a lot of ways that it could go wrong. But for their part, I think Albashorn has done a really good job making it go right. And every time.
They don't have a miss yet.
I think that is because I think they really nailed the pricing and the sort of like specs, and they've really nailed their market segment, I think.
Well, and their design is flawless.
Yes.
Right. Well, their colorways are great. Their actual watch design dimensions are great. Like they hit everything.
And that of course is of the utmost importance. But I think that there's something to be said for like really knowing who's going to buy this watch, how many are they going to buy, etc. That is a really tough part of the business.
And to crack, as it were.
I think Alvestron's done a great job. With that said, they released two watches in 2024, both the Maxi Graph and the Type 10. And then last year, they came out with the Thunder Graph, which I think of all of their watches was perhaps my favorite. This was sort of a dark denim, like navy denim dial with red accents. Just terrific. I loved this watch from the moment I saw it. Well, they've released a second version of that. This one, so the original Thunder Graph was or could have been made for sort of Antarctic exploration. This new one, the Thunder Graph Kombu? Imagines a chronograph conceived for the 1952 Swiss Everest expeditions. And so it changes up the color. Here we've got, I'm going to call this sort of a dark mint green.
Ooh, I'm calling dial. It sagey.
Sage green. I love that. I love that.
Sage is it.
We've got the same dimensions. We've got a 39 millimeter case with a 12 millimeter height on this thing. We've got a very interesting sort of layout. We've got this 1030 crown and a 930 mono pusher, which is, I don't know if that's unique to Alvestron, but I think it might be.
And it's the mono pusher is totally obstructed from a top-down view by this big overhanging bezel, dog bowl bezel.
That's right. And it's practical, right? The way it's designed is to allow operation with your right thumb, assuming you're a normal-handed person. It allows operation with your right thumb while you're wearing gloves.
And big, theoretically, the crown.
Big knurled edges. Yeah. I mean, it's just a really, really cool watch. So they call it, they say mint green opaline tone, inspired by the Himalayan landscape. And then we've got this sort of California ghost dial that they've retained from the prior version with Roman numerals in the upper quadrant, but the bottom quadrant being dominated by these
The Arabic numerals were replaced by the subdials.
We've got a chronograph layout, running seconds at 4:30 and a 30-minute counter at 7:30. It is weird, and I like it. We've got the caliber ALB03M, which is a proprietary COSC certified reworked Salida SW510 mono pusher, which is in turn based on the 7750 architecture. It's a 28.8 vibration, 65 hour power reserve. It's a really cool movement. And these are, in that $4,000, $4,500 range, which is a lot of money, but for what you're getting in terms of movement, I think it's justifiable. It's certainly not an impulse buy, I don't think. You kind of have to know what you're getting. Orologically, I think they're doing what they need to do. Details and dimensions, certainly, I think they're doing what they need to do. But they're not giving it away, right?
No, and don't. Right, they have established themselves. Right, they have a strong foothold. This isn't a flyer brand anymore.
Yeah,
this is an established brand that's been making shit for a couple of years and is continuing to produce, continuing to deliver. I think they've got a very strong foothold to, with a proprietary movement, whole, I mean, it, this isn't a whole brand new SKU, right? But they did all the R&D.
It's a new SKU, but not a brand new model.
Yeah, and this isn't a brand new platform, right? This platform existed, but this is all IP to Albashorn, right? This isn't a new color. This isn't just a new dial.
That's right.
They're doing a thing in a meaningful way.
Now, with this release, we're also getting, Albashorn is releasing their very first steel bracelet, which is something that I've talked about in the past. I said, gosh, you know, I really wish we could get a bracelet. They've done it. They've released a steel bracelet for this. This is, I think the kids might call this backwards compatible, meaning it has been designed to work with every model. It does not have a fitted end link. It has got a straight bar end link.
Mm-hmm. Which is the right call.
I think aesthetically that works.
I wish it was
not my preference.
I think there were a lot of other bracelet ways they could have gone to capture this 1940s, 50s feel. They had to go straight link. I appreciate that they did that. I think this three link could have been punched up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like bond clip or mesh or.
Yeah. Maybe
three link is fine. There's nothing. I have no bitch. I think it like it's an, it for me feels like an afterthought relative to the rest of their design language in their watches. And to design something that's backwards compatible with five watches now, four watches,
three and a half.
Three. Yeah. So a fair bit of watches. There's a challenge there. And I think this is an acceptable middle ground that was met, landed upon perhaps. Only 199 of these.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're making a small amount of these. So, man, I love it. I think that this is just a really terrific watch. I'm a big fan. Andrew?
Well, we're talking about the cold. We might as well talk about Nevada Gretchen's Antarctic Erotic.
Might as well.
So this is it's the Antarctic Erotic. It's a 38 millimeter svelte, sexy sport dress watch with a really good Jubilee bracelet on it. I'm always mixed feelings about the etched end link versus links or other options, but this is well executed.
This, yeah, I think Nevada does a good job. This is a, you know, like whatever it says, seven link.
Yeah. They do a good job.
Yeah.
Fowing the links into the end link, but I always have mixed feelings about it. Whatever. The story is not the Antarctic top down, right? It's got good colors. It's a brown, a black, a kind of salmony pink, lovely colorway here. But the real treat, and what makes this an erotic watch is when you turn it over and you wind the watch, you have a soon-to-be mommy penguin and about-to-be baby daddy penguin doing work with the release of the tension on the movement. It is ridiculous and fantastic. I don't know if we've ever talked about any of the like actually deliberately erotic watches. We talked about that booby watch a few weeks ago that had like crazy nips pointing in every direction. There are numerous erotic watches out in the world that depict things on the dial, on the case back. There's something really great to me about penguins on the case back in the movement, not just on the case back, but incorporated into the movement to be doing the dirty as a function of the watch functioning. I love it. And it's, you know, typical Nevada pricing, sub $2,000, top down. You're getting a really fantastic, well-designed, well-proportioned watch. But on the back, you're getting some some Antarctic dirty.
I'm gonna make a suggestion here, and also make an accusation. I'm gonna accuse you, Andrew, of making assumptions. It's well known that penguins form homosexual bonds, and so there is. These might be two daddy penguins.
It could be, and I do owe these penguins an apology for assuming their gender.
You know, they even penguins in gay relationships even raise adopted chicks from time to time.
Yeah, because it's a hard life as a penguin.
It's cold.
It's cold.
It is cold.
Seals, whales, sharks. Basically everything likes to eat penguin but humans.
I like to eat penguin.
I've not had it.
I guess I haven't
eaten. I'd fuck with some penguin chicken wings because those are like, those are thick legs. I'd fuck with some penguin meat if ever it came to be.
You know, Andrew, have you ever eaten squirrel?
Yeah.
I want to say that squirrels should be like really tasty because squirrels eat good.
Yeah, but they're so lean. Yeah. They're just like constantly running. Those fast twitch muscles are not tasty.
Fair enough.
Yeah, their fast twitch muscles are just not.
But squirrels do eat real good. You got to get the ones that the lazy squirrels. Those are the ones you got to eat, like the backyard squirrels.
Yeah, but you can't shoot those easy.
Well,
because they're a backyard.
Listen, you can't get caught shooting those.
Maybe not. I get the occasional like. Hey, you're out of the army. These are some veteran job postings for you emails. I recently got one for a contract in Antarctica.
Okay.
Doing refueling operations for some airbase down there.
Okay.
And I was like intrigued. I think that'd be cool as shit to go live in Antarctica for 6 months and just fuel helicopters. Or airplanes or whatever. I don't know what the fuck is flying down there, but it was just a basically like a gas station attendant. But because it's in Antarctica, the money was not bad.
I mean, you were a little bit temperature sensitive, I think, to pull off an Antarctic.
Oh no, I
occupation.
I hate the heat.
And the cold.
No, I'm all about it.
Okay, fair enough.
As long as you're prepared for it, right? Like if it just turns cold, if I get a 30 degree temperature swing,
sure,
that sucks.
Sure,
because I wasn't prepared. But no, I would much prefer the cold.
Richemont is being weird as ever. Richemont owns Mont Blanc. Mont Blanc is operated, I think, with a fair degree of independence within that. But Richemont is doing, you know, they just sold Baume & Mercier. This week, Mont Blanc announced, I think that there's been whisperings of this for some time, but formally announced that it is separating its Minerva product line from the Mont Blanc brand. So Minerva is being sort of isolated and separated brand-wise from Mont Blanc within Richemont.
Can I interrupt you really quick?
I would love it.
We do watch news at the top, and this is watch news.
There's a watch, Andrew. If you would just shut up.
Okay.
We'll talk about a watch. and that's fine. Like, I actually don't really care all that much about Richemont.
I also don't understand even what a reorg like that even means.
Well, you know, we see this, right? Sometimes I think most sort of familiar to me would be Seiko separating out the Grand Seiko line, right? It just made sense, like, for them to treat this like its own brand. This feels a little bit more forced than that, right? Because we're not seeing a ton of Minerva, you know, branding and like people aren't talking about Minerva, although I think they will be now. And that is because with this announcement, Minerva's released a small line of watches, but that release is being headlined by what they're calling the Unveiled Crownless. You will not be surprised to learn that the unveiled crownless is a watch that has no crown.
Mm. So it can't even be royalty.
This is a mechanically wound, time-only watch with a small seconds at 6 o'clock. It is operated by the star of the show, which is a rose gold fluted bezel that is abso-freaking-lutely gorgeous. It is.
I'd call this more coin edge than fluted. Sure. I think fluted is tend to be like more scalloped shape. Can we accept coin edge? Because these are pretty sharp. This is like gearbox.
Yeah.
Angles.
Yeah, that's right. It is. They do.
But they're deep.
Minerva does call it a fluted bezel, but I accept, Andrew. I accept your distinction. This is an homage to Minerva's history making military watches. And I would be a liar if I said, I look at this watch and I go, oh yeah, I can see the,
maybe if it's like the oligarchy, if it's the oligarchs whose kids bought, you know, captaincies and stuff.
With that said, absolutely fantastic. So dial layout includes wonderful guilloche. Yeah, a lot of texture. That's the right way. Wonderful guilloche on the chapter ring or the outer ring. It's a bit of a sector dial. We've got a bezel complication. Guilloche
is wide, though. It's like big fat. It's like snake skin.
Yeah.
Almost. It's not real tight and deep. It's just, it's a very flat guilloche.
Winding and time setting functions both done through bidirectional turns with a lever on the underside of the watch that switches between winding and time setting.
You need two hands to work this.
I think the lever is just push. A push and set, and then push back to unset.
Oh.
We've got a in-house caliber M15.08 movement, which I know nothing about, but I know it is a hand-finished, very, very well-finished movement with a free-sprung balance.
It's really lovely.
And a, you know, hairspring made and set at the in-house at the Minerva Atelier, 139 components, rhodium plated German silver, Cote de Genève, blah, 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 blah. It's 40,000 euro.
I was going to say this feels like a price upon request,
but it's fucking gorgeous. And I wanted to talk about this because this feels to me like obviously not a new watch brand, but it feels to me like a new player.
Yeah, which is interesting coming out of the, like, spinning off of Montblanc, who I think arguably is struggling to remain a player.
Yeah, I think Montblanc is a difficult IP, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, really, they're a brand known for making outrageously expensive plastic fountain pens, right? Yeah. That's what Montblanc does. They make incredibly overpriced plastic fountain pens.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
and a few watches.
Yeah, but I think for watches, it's a tough IP. I think Richemont, in separating out Minerva, is like, okay, wait. Let's actually do some watch stuff.
Maybe they can like unsaddle themselves from Montblanc.
I think. That would be my assumption here. Is that, you know, and I can't imagine they intend to stop making Montblanc watches.
Right? No, no, no. But like create some freedom for Minerva to work in a similar space.
Yeah, well, and maybe in more of a haute horology space where mm-hmm. I think Montblanc's IP is a little bit saddled by Montblanc's other things, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite the same, but
I put Mont Blanc in the same world that I put the Leica watches, right? Which is to say,
I
it makes sense to me, but also like you're a camera company.
I accept, but then if you look at Casio or Seiko, Seiko owns
and now makes you can't fucking compare everything. The Japanese. Now you can't compare the. It's a totally different world. Japanese is a totally different.
But what about jewelry houses? I mean, and I think it's maybe different, right?
Jewelry
but
houses are different.
But if we look at Cartier, if we look
different.
At
different.
What about Louis Vuitton?
I mean, I think that's.
I think Louis Vuitton makes like nothing worthwhile in the watch world. Reasonably relative to Mont Blanc.
Some interesting stuff,
but not relative to Mont Blanc.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you see like certain, like Ralph Lauren makes their engraved sterling silver.
And Polo makes, they're the Piaget Polo. Like,
yeah. I don't think that's, is that associated with Ralph Lauren?
No, it's not. That was just another brand that came to mind. That's not a typical like banger. Well,
and Piaget is obviously there. Piaget is a watch brand.
Yeah.
So.
There's yeah, maybe no, not a good comparison.
It's tricky. And certainly we do see this in these luxury brands where it's like, well, you know what? We're going to Gucci, for instance. I'm going to make some fucking watches and you're going to like it. And that's all there is to it. With that said, I do see some similarities between Leica and Mont Blanc. Both companies make watches that I find interesting. Mm-hmm. So this is not unintended to be a criticism, but I think that there is some baggage there, I think is my point.
But Leica's not here never for made,
Minerva, right?
Leica's never made anything iconic as a watch.
You think you're going to put a... Which Mont Blanc watch are you going to put an iconic?
I don't know. I hope something... I don't have anything.
Yeah.
Blancpain hasn't... Or not Blancpain. Mont Blanc hasn't... I don't know. I think it's interesting. I agree with you. I think it's
I don't think we're disagreeing.
Yeah. I think it's a there's a lot of potential in Minerva untethered from Mont Blanc.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they're going to release shit like this because this is fucking rad.
Yeah. Can we talk about something else rad that is like rad on rad?
Yeah.
Resence.
Oh yeah.
With their new Type 11.
Oh yeah.
So Resence has for their lifespan has been modifying movements to integrate them to their discs as they rotate around. and now have a totally in-house integrated movement in the Type 11. And Resence is a brand that we talk about with some regularity because everything they do is so fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean,
right? It's bizarre. It's not postmodern because I think postmodern has attribute like kind of a negative connotation to postmodern because I think postmodern means something specific that it it's futuristic without being science fiction-y.
Sure, I'm with you. I'm tracking.
And I'm struggling to like find a word for that because postmodern is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think novel is a word. I don't know that it's the word.
I think it's still like just in the zone and not quite on the nose.
I wasn't here for it, but I did edit it. You and Frank did an episode where you talked about like I don't remember your
would have been our favorite watches
favorite of the year, watches where you talked about and I think Resence was for, he was like this is my Desert Island watch right mm-hmm. This is the coolest watch there is and there's something to be said for that not that I necessarily agree with him but there's something his point was like this is really fucking cool and different and awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Resence does. Everything. Resence. I don't really know.
Let's say Resence. Resence.
We'll stick with the hard S's. Okay.
Spice that S up.
So they have a fully integrated movement now moving into these watches. And fun, their battery, power reserve indicator is this rotating It's basically the inside of a bearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ton of tiny little ball bearings that are multicolored that show your power reserve indicator. And I have bitched and moaned on this show more than you guys would like to hear about power reserve indicators. This is it. This is the gold standard in innovation and in execution of a good power reserve indicator. This thing is crownless. Again, we're talking about a lot of non-royal watches. It is hand wound by a hasp that opens and then winds the case back. This is just as cool as it gets. To see a watch brand like Resence being able to move away from being a customer brand for movements and into their own movements is, I don't know, I think that's like what dreams are made of, right? 23,000 Swiss francs on this, that's what we should have expected, and I am here for it. This thing is, it's as cool as cool gets.
I mean, I think we're past the point where we can say, oh, it's a lot of money for what that is. You know, prior to this,
every cent is well spent on this.
Prior to this, Resence was using like heavily modified
Salitas.
ETA 2824.
Were they ETAs?
Maybe Salita too, right? Same architecture. But and there was a novelty to their modification, right? Where they're taking this really sort of basic movement and
they were ETAs, yeah.
And linking it to their novel. Well, with this release, with the R01 release, they are fully integrating the things happening, the things happening on the dial, the things that you're seeing, the presentation is directly and fully integrated with the movement for the first time ever.
It's actually the movement, right? It's not the movement actuating. Correct. Things. You're watching the movement represented by shit dropped on top of it.
That is the best way to say it, Andrew. That is the best way to say it. And so with
it's like
this,
it's the coolest skeleton ever made.
Resence is firmly, you know, I say Resence, and the more I think about it, I'm like, it might be Resence.
I like soft S's on it.
Firmly in haute horology territory. I mean, this is
as if they haven't been before.
They've like, created a carve out in the world.
I'm gonna keep. Hey, yeah, this
just
up.
keep going, Andrew.
What's because you're talking?
They've created a carve out within horology, and so you might say, you know, this. Sorry, I'm not. I don't mean to slander
me. Put those away.
I don't mean to slander anybody.
Put those away. But
this is not a C12 Loco or even a Bel Canto, right? And again, very cool watches. We've talked about them on the show a lot. This is something wholly different, and it's really cool. And if you're not, if you're like, well, I got to look into this a little bit, just do it, because this is a different way to tell time. It's a different way to display time. And now it's a different way to keep time.
It's a fully novel mechanism to do the thing that we've been doing for hundreds of years.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I think that's the novelty of it. And I'm kind of inclined to maybe accept novel in the way that like we accepted novel for coronavirus, right? Like this is just new and we don't know what the fuck to do about it because it's groundbreaking. That's what we're looking at here. And I think there is not enough excitement around what Resence has just accomplished and put to market, right? This isn't, hey, we're crowdfunding it. This is to market.
Well, and of course, Resence has developed cash flow, right? We know that about.
But it's not, it's to market, right? It's a thing. It exists. It's real. It's tested. It's QA'd. It's QC'd. And it's out there.
Woolbrook, not a name that we spend a ton of time on. And that's not because they are uninteresting. On the contrary, they are very interesting. It is because, and I'll tell you why we hate Woolbrook, is because in the time between me designing the 11 Atmos and me releasing the 11 Atmos, Woolbrook released the 11 Atmos, and it pissed me off, and so I hate them.
And I
that's not exactly
I hate
true.
My proxy.
that's not exactly true. I really like Woolbrook's designs.
Not exactly.
I think they're either. I think they're a fun. I think they're a really fun brand. What I did not expect to read this week is that Woolbrook had released a new chronograph with a new chronograph caliber that they are responsible for. So chronographs.
Did Foster do that?
Chronographs.
Sorry, that was kind of mean. That was a little below the belt.
Are interesting because there is really only a few of them, right? Seiko's got their speed timer chronograph. We've got, we've got just a very few, you know, we say, oh, this is 7750 architecture or, right? We just have a few automatic or mechanical chronographs that exist. And so for Woolbrook to announce a watch that says with the new Gimbrun PS6402 automatic chronograph caliber, I was like, excuse me? Because first, who the fuck is Gimbrun?
And where?
And okay. So Gimbrun, Luke, sorry.
Gimbrun? I think it's a long U.
Gimbrun. Sure. Is an old company. It's an old company. And now it is a revived company, like so many companies in the watch world. But wait.
There's more.
How does a zombie company release a new automatic chronograph caliber?
They have the IP.
This is a chronograph that has been designed by Woolbrook, by way of Gimbrun, and then made by Peacock. So Peacock,
the show,
Chinese like company.
Not the streaming service.
Different. Peacock, the Chinese company that makes really cool movements, but because they do so in China, I think they often get overlooked. However, Atelier Wen has been using Peacock movement in their very, very nice watches. Yes. Although they refer to it as the Dandong SL something or the other.
They have to change the name for legal reasons.
And I think that they also, Peacock has also been making really freaking cool and somewhat affordable tourbillons. With that said, Peacock.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple of years ago when they dropped. It was like a sub-$1,000 tourbillon. About $1,000?
I'm not sure that's the same, actually.
Was it different?
I think those are different things. With that said, Peacock's a rad movement. So basically, Peacock is white labeling Gimbrun spec'd chronographs. Now, this is
the IP laws in China, like that place must be just the Wild West.
The most interesting part of this movement, and something that the swift-eyed of you will recognize, is that it's a bicompax, but rather than the two chronograph subdials being located on the 90-degree or on the central axis, they're a little bit north of center.
Just a touch.
Existing at roughly, I'm going to say, 245 and 915, which is weird. I mean, it's not like, it's like kind of whatever, but
they're just like 2 millimeters north.
That's right. That's right. It's like, okay, interesting. You know, whatever. This is, they're
called, kind of like it.
This is the PS6402. It is a new automatic chronograph caliber. Really cool. 41 jewel hand winding.
And sub-$1,000.
28,800 beats per hour. 55 hour power reserve. Power reserve.
Because that's because French. It's French. It's fancy.
Jinx.
We spend way too much time together.
Movement featuring, they're calling it an Armour de France finish, which is some
French
sort of
armor.
interlocking hexagon, blah, 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 blah.
Nobody knows what it means. Nobody has tested French armor.
This thing,
gotcha, Luke.
This thing's freaking rad. So they're calling this the Jet Flyer. We've got a 38 by 46 by 12 1 to the top of the bezel, 14 to the top of the domed sapphire crystal. Not the thinnest or the daintiest of movements, but
it's a fucking mechanical chronograph.
Who cares? And as Andrew mentioned, $845 on leather,
100 meters of water resistance,
which lines it up with Seagull ST19s, right?
It's a little north of an ST19.
Well, I mean,
little north. Just I don't think touch.
So. This is about the price that most ST19s are coming in these days, if you can even find one, because you're buying it from
one of five manufacturers.
Studio Underdog. This thing's cool, man. This is really freaking cool.
It is. It's nothing like when you look at it.
The watch itself is like whatever.
When you look at it, you're just kind of like, okay. And then you look at the spec sheet, and this becomes the thing. You can just click the keyboard. Throw my extra keys. I sit in the tube.
What else do you have to say?
I have nothing to say. Can we talk about a not Chinese brand?
I mean, you can talk about whatever you want.
Okay. I want to talk about a Hong Kong brand. Earthen, with the new Summit Nightfall and Moonglow. And these, like, top down again are just kind of like, another aventurine. And then I looked at them a little bit more and I was like, I think I really, really like these. The case shape on them is like really soft, like almost Timex-y, soft rounded edges, right? Like this looks just kind of like a daily banger, but it has an aventurine dial. And then turns out it's a white ceramic and a black ceramic, and everything about these is cool with it's a 9039 movement in it. This is like my kind of, this is how you turn boring into a little bit spicy. Like they dropped a couple jalapenos on sort of the perfect field watch case in the way of aventurine, ceramic, some double dome AR in there to create some purples and some colors. They put a PVD stripe on this big hunkin'. No reason for it ever to exist crown on a 38 millimeter watch. They hit every box for me on these. They're under $1,000, or no, they're not under 1,000. They're approximately 1,100 euros. I love this. This is like,
yeah, no, these are great.
This is the field watch that it, like, you're like, hey, you wanna see a sexy field watch? And you open up your trench coat jacket and this is what's hanging from it.
Yeah, I mean they're 10-4 thick, 38 millimeters ceramic. These things are rad. I think the
FKM crown on this, though, there's no bracelets.
Yeah. FKM only. And the bezel's the crown is bizarre.
It's huge and perfect and amazing.
Yeah, I think it's bizarre. I don't like it.
It doesn't match at all in a way that just perfectly works because it's not ceramic. It's a steel crown with a PVD marker stripe in it. No, this nails it for me. And this brand, I'm not sure we've talked about Earthen before.
Yeah, we talked about them when they released their field watch. We did talk about them.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a new aventurine edition.
Yeah.
And I'm for it. In ceramic.
They caught you with the aventurine.
They brought me with the aventurine.
You're historically kind of a sucker for aventurine, Andrew.
I am. Well done, aventurine.
So, Casio. When Casio released their EFK 100 watches last year, We came in our pants. We, no,
I did.
We almost talked about them on the show. In fact, we did talk about them on the show, but we did so briefly. You know, occasionally when we get to the end of the show, we look at the list of things we haven't gotten to, and then we kind of blast through. That's what we
did. And I never link them, because by the time we've concluded, I delete the
In this case, you tabs. Did link it.
Oh, how about that?
In this case, you did link it. With that said, we didn't give it the full treatment, and that is, I think, in no small part because, I'll speak for myself, but I think you were sort of the same mind, at least at the time. I was underwhelmed by the decisions that Casio made. And my point was, you're Casio. You are one of the biggest companies on earth, right? You have R&D capabilities beyond 99.999% of all companies on earth.
And that means 100% of all watch companies.
Make a fucking movement, Casio. They didn't. And not only did they not make a movement, which, fine. They used an NH35, which for me was an absolute miss. I'm sorry. NH35 is a movement that's reserved for micro brands that are offering the best possible entry point into an automatic watch. That's my personal opinion. For anybody else, an yes. NH35 is a miss, I think. And sorry, you can disagree, and I know a lot of you disagree.
Disagree all you want. That's the reality of where the NH35 sits in the hierarchy of available automatic movements.
It was a bummer for me. I saw that, and I was like, you know what? Casio, I don't care. And then we pushed this watch to the very end of the episode. We kind of talked about it. I was disappointed. I think, Andrew, you sort of shared some of those sentiments, maybe not as vehemently as me. With that said, Casio has evolved, quietly has evolved their automatic EFK watch, which is to say we now have the EFK 100 being upgraded to the EFK 110. Thank you, Casio, for that novelty of naming conventions. And
it's better than 101.
They did not make the wrong movement. Okay. So Everett's still slightly disappointed. With that said, they moved it to a Miyota 8215, which is physically a much more enticing package for me. With that change, they were able to make this watch a millimeter smaller, with instead of 39 down to 38 millimeter, and almost a full millimeter thinner down to 11.8 from 12.5, which means it is a way fucking better watch. It's just a way better watch. Look, it is virtually identical. You would look at these and say, that's the same watch.
Yeah.
Except that it's better. Andrew, I don't know if you saw this photograph.
Yeah, the side-to-side photograph is shocking. They clicked the right corner of the screen and scaled it down to an appropriate size. This is now a viable first automatic watch.
100. We're going to link to the Fratello article on this, the Fratello write-up on this watch, because Fratello did a good job capturing the dimensions. In particular, there's a photo in that write-up that has these two watches stacked one on top of the other. And it's like, oh,
you fixed it. It went from being a bummer to
PRX. I accept.
Almost. Like, I think this could be like a PRX competitor. Not a killer, right? This isn't going to step in. But this is an absolute PRX competitor in every dimension. The colors are good. Yeah. I think it's
better than a PRX. I mean, Casio, the one thing Casio does way better than Tissot, or Citizen for that matter, is finishing.
But I could do without the texture on the dial, right?
This still has kind of the
sport mode, like beach sport mode, not sport watch, but like beach sport mode. Go play volleyball in it, bro, with your Pit Viper texture on it. Which I could do without. I think if they make these in some matte and some gloss, you have a not a PRX killer, but certainly bleeding off some market share.
These are coming in at about $315, which makes them, I think, pretty spicy. If you're okay with a little bit of rotor wobble, say that five times fast. If
rotor
you're
okay, wobble.
That was once.
That's all you get.
I think this is really cool, and I think that this takes a release that for me was super disappointing. I think, in fact, I'm going to quote myself, I hate this watch, to a watch that I'm like, yeah, this is cool. This is cool.
It does a thing.
It's cool. Yeah. I find this watch to be incredibly acceptable. Now, this is an integrated link. Casio has done integrated in a really weird way. They've got a captive male end link that sits, it's a milled end link, and it sits above the lugs, which come all the way in. I want to say this is about a 10 or a 12 millimeter male end link. And it's a really good look. If you're going to do male end links, this is the way to do it. It is a really attractive attachment mechanism, but obviously that creates some limitations in terms of what you can put this on.
I don't think you're gonna need anything but the bracelet.
You buy this to be worn on the bracelet. That's right. I feel like it's a bit of a trend to this show. I'm having trouble identifying what the trend, but there's like a theme to this show, which is, well, I don't know, something about movements. You got anything else you want to talk about?
No. And I'm going to close the links before you start blasting.
Okay. So with that said, we will blast a little bit. Unimatic released a rad special ops.
They did. I'll link that.
Sort of one of their dive chronographs, but we've got a sterile bezel on this.
Unimatic does the coolest shit.
Timex re-released their titanium GMT. It's more of the same, but we've got green. If you like that thing, if you like that sort of thing, I should say. What else? What else do you got?
I don't have anything else. I closed all links.
New Kiwame Tokyos that are beautiful. I did get my Kiwame Tokyo, which I'm very happy about. And Formex has a Reef 39.5 with forged carbon, and it's pretty sexy. Forged carbon, baller. Dial and bezel insert. Andrew, other things. What do you got?
So one of my favorite parts about New York City is street meat, right? Like you can't walk a block.
He means street meat that you put in your mouth and then ends up in your stomach and gets digested.
It's my favorite part of New York City. You can't walk two blocks and remain hungry, right? Like New Yorkers are just a people that are never hungry.
Sure.
Because it's just everywhere.
I'm also a people that's never hungry.
And every time I go to a Euro stand, they squirt this red sauce on the top of the Euro, but it comes from not a labeled squirt bottle. It's like a reusable squirt bottle, and they're all squirting the same red sauce on my Euro. It doesn't matter what street meat vendor you go to.
Familiar.
It's everyone's squirting the same red sauce.
Halal hot sauce.
It is. So, but here's the problem. The halal guys, that's who they're buying it from. Presumably, right? This is confirmed by Reddit. But they don't sell to like normal people. I can't buy just a bottle of it and have it delivered to my home. I have to go bribe a street meat vendor. And I don't have any of those locally. So I,
we do have halal carts in Eugene, Oregon, just in case you're like, oh man, they're the back. We do have halal carts.
Yeah, but our downtown and food cart zone is like 6 blocks.
Andrew can't go down there either.
Yeah. Also that. But here's the deal. You can't get it at your house. So I went to the Reddit and the Google and found like, I don't know, a handful of people suggesting that they had clones or close twos or like, hey, if you buy this, it's similar to. Ultimately, I went with the, hey, I found about 7 recipes that claim to be the clone. So I condensed that and kind of tweaked my own off of it and made a batch of it. And it was fantastic. You tried it. You have it at your house.
Andrew, I have, since you dropped this off yesterday, eaten this on coconut rice. I've eaten it on chicken, like a slow cook sous vide chicken. I ate it on fettuccine Alfredo. I ate it on a peanut butter and jelly pita sandwich that I had before baseball practice today. I have put it on, I think, every single meal that I've had since you dropped it off.
That is the vote of confidence that I wanted. It's not exactly the same.
It is a fire.
It is not better. It is not worse. Sauce. It is exactly what I wanted it to be. It's nice and smooth. It's thin. It's not like a thick drizzle on. It's a it's a thin like drip upon.
But not watery.
Not watery because there's no water in it. It is. So I just like basically the recipes that I found were like cayenne pepper, chili peppers. Like just put all the hot shit in your house into a pot. Add a little bit of sugar, some vinegar, some lemon, some salt. And just a splash of water and just let it cook.
Cook it
just,
for forever.
Just simmer it. But I didn't simmer it for very long. It probably simmered for like 40 minutes. I also added some harissa paste to give a little bit of smoke. And man, it's shelf stable because there's nothing. All the ingredients are dried. You just buzz it in a blender or a food processor until it's totally smooth. I've done it. I don't know why I waited so long. It's so good. It's like it's flash spicy. It doesn't hang on.
That is what I was just going to say.
You get a little bit of sweat beating on your hairline, regardless of where it is. You get some sweat beating, a flash of heat, yep. And then it's just gone.
It pops you and then it doesn't linger. And it doesn't, for me at least, YMMV, it doesn't mess with my guts.
It does not give me phase 3 problems.
Correct. Yeah, it's fantastic, man. I'm a big fan. I legitimately had this on every meal that I've had since you dropped it off.
It's one
of my favorite hot sauces I've ever had.
You had to have known that I was bringing you some because when I knocked on your door, it was just Kim home. And she's like, you have some hot sauce for me? I'm going to put it on chicken. She like just knew why I was coming over. Because you can't make a small batch of something like that. You need to make like...
Sure.
20 or more ounces.
So, question, Andrew, you were going to post your recipe.
No, there's no recreating it. I went kind of freestyle on it. I had some like dried Thai chilies and some chili de arbol, and like I just took all the dry chilies I had in my pantry and some Thai chili flakes, some red pepper flakes, some harissa, and some lemon juice, and just buzzed it with. Yeah, there was no recipe. I'm not good at recipe making.
Yeah. Well, you should do that. You know what, Andrew? I am going to I've got a gift idea for you. We have at my house, we have a family recipe book. And in that book, this has become, you know, Kim and I have been married 20 years in June. Is crazy. Right. But in that time, we've accumulated recipes from, you know, probably,
you know, at this point, half a dozen family members who will never talk to again.
Because you don't want to, or because they're expired?
Because they died.
Okay.
Recipes from, you know, both of our parents, you know, including recipes that we had to like sort of coax out of them, and also our own recipes. And the this book, when we got it, was, you know, a little silly. I was like, okay, this is cute, but a little silly. Well, it's evolved into one of my prized possessions.
That's really sweet.
Really irreplaceable. You know, we should probably at some digitize it, back it up. But because if the house were to burn, it would be gone today. So that's a good reminder. But I occasionally, not always, not every recipe, but when we get a recipe and it's like, that's a fucking winner, we're going to make that again, I will write that down and put it in a card. And at some point, we'll transfer this over and give this to our children, right? And say, these are the recipes
that you grew up eating.
And anyway, I'm thinking of that for you. Of course, now that I've said that, I've ruined the surprise. But it'll be long enough from now before I have a chance to give you a present. So I have a non-traditional other thing today. It's not a show or a thing I bought.
Do me.
With that said, it is something, and I do this from time to time, right? It's more of like an experience. I recently, Andrew, got into pistols, firing weapons. I'm not a
shooting
hunter.
Shooting sports.
I'm not a hunter, and I'm not likely to become a hunter. I'm also not a traditional Second Amendment type. In fact, I'm sort of a gun control proponent.
I think in a lot of ways, stand in like opposition to you're a perfect dichotomy.
With that said, I have some experience with firearms through the military, not a lot, but I've just, you know, this is interesting to me, and it's interesting to me, and it's something I want to know more about. So within that. You can create a rabbit hole, but one of the things I've been thinking,
as you have,
one of the things I've been thinking about is, okay. Now that I'm interested in this hobby, I need to make sure that I'm doing it safely. And so, that can include lots of stuff, right? Just knowledge and training and being smart and being careful, but, eye protection, ear protection. But the sort of the thing that kept coming back to me was this idea of an IFAC or an individual first aid kit, which is what the acronym IFAC stands for. And I decided, you know, if I'm going to be, you know, going, Andrew, you and I hope you don't mind me saying so, we joined a local gun club. It's Isaac Walton Gun Club, which is a hippie organization. And it's just, I think
it's also a dichotomy.
If I'm going to join a gun club, this is the perfect one. I went to just shoot some targets the other day, and there was an entire group of trans shooters that were there practicing. And I was like, I found,
they shoot USPSA, and from what I understand, they're fucking nail drivers.
I found my home, right? Like, this place is awesome. Anyway, I don't mean to get political, but it's just like, you know, it's not a typical, prototypical, like, it's Eugene, everybody's gun welcome. People. That's right. Everybody's welcome. And so anyway, I don't mean to talk about guns, but what I do want to talk about is putting together this IFAC. I've had so much fun learning about first aid, learning about how to implement first aid. You know, you and I both went through many of the same Army training. I don't want to say we went through the same Army training because we did different things.
Some similar things.
And so, you know, one of the things that we're trained to use is a tourniquet and an Israeli bandage. And, you know, these things, these terms you use, I have some of this knowledge, but not a ton of it. But reassessing sort of my knowledge of that stuff and building this, I'm not a prepper and I'm not a bug out guy, but I do like the idea that if something were to happen, I would be prepared both in terms of knowledge and in terms of stuff.
Well, yeah, there's like real value in like sitting on your couch and watching the Mariners play and hearing your wife make a weird noise from the driveway and go out and find that she's broken her leg on a scooter and knowing what to do.
That's right.
They're, like the value of immediate action, not necessarily trauma care, because trauma care is a slightly higher level, but immediate action first aid is super valuable. And it's something that we've kind of like eschewed in our very convenient worlds. And like the moment you're at a cell phone service and you're on your own, people die.
Yeah.
Because you just like don't know what to do.
You know, stopping a hemorrhage is something that I think very few people have to deal with. But if you
and the one time you ever have to, you really wish you knew how.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, I'm a baseball coach, and I that was actually the inspiration of starting the first aid kit was I needed to have a coach's first aid kit. And as I started, I was like, well, I could go to Dick's and buy that first aid kit that they have on the shelf. Yeah. And I thought, well, but you know what? I think if I were to do that, it would have a bunch of stuff that I really didn't want, and it wouldn't have the things that I did want. And so I was like, no, I'm going to spend probably a little bit more money. Just be clear. I'm not saving money, but I'm going to actually make a first aid kit that I think is going to work for me. And I'm
something that's more than Band-Aids, sting gel, burn gel,
and I have those things.
Yeah. But something that's more than those things.
But instead of having like 15 different sizes of bandages, one of which anybody's ever going
to
want.
Nobody even knows what to do with that Band-Aid.
I have the bandages that I know that I use in my regular life, and I have those in there. And I have, you know, the burn gel that I think, this is the good burn gel. This is the one I want to have. And I have, you know, Neosporin, simple. But also I have, you know, the tape that I would want to use. If I were to put a big Band-Aid on my hand or a big piece of gauze, this is the tape I'd want to use. You know, I have those things. And then also within that, I was like, okay, now it's time for me to refresh myself on how do you use an Israeli bandage? How do you use a tourniquet? And I'm going to get those things. So I have them, God forbid, should I need them, but also refresh myself on how do I use those things? How do I use a clay infused gauze package, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to stop bleeding, one of the ways you can do that is by stuffing sort of a coagulant or a clotting gauze into that wound. How do you use that? Well, I'll tell you what. I know now because I forced myself to learn how to use that. I ordered that product in case I need it. God forbid. And I don't mean, not necessarily for a gunshot. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons.
Penetrating injuries. We have kids.
That's right. That's right.
Penetrating injuries are not unusual. You fall into a bush and you get the hard, like the actual like long hard stick and not one of the little leafy things. You have a penetrating injury.
And I think for the way I've been, you know, enjoying gun sports, I'm way more likely to have that type of injury than I would be gun injuries. You know, God forbid something bad happens in any event, but it was more like, okay, I'm going to be not a prepper, but prepared.
And importantly different.
And that's been really, I don't know, there's something about it that's been satisfying.
It's empowering validating, that's right. And meaningful, like,
and also I got to buy some cool kit.
Yeah, like, so my younger son is autistic and makes some weird choices sometimes when he gets upset. Like 2 years ago, he was mad at us and he was like, "I'm gonna do this," and he grabbed the glass of the glass shield of the pellet stove. And then it had immediate, like, second-degree burns on his entire palm. Oof. Which would typically be an emergency room trip to get burn gel. Because that's what they do for burns. Because they weren't significant enough to require anything else. I had my aid kit and all my burn gel and my gauze. And he had a burn mitten for a week.
Yeah.
Because... I had the things and the knowledge necessary to be able to address the issue.
And you know, yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's my other thing.
It's being prepared.
I you know what? My other thing for the week is I built a first aid kit and quote unquote IFAC, more of a trauma kit. And in the process of that, I learned how to use all these things. And I just feel like I'm more prepared. Were I to be with your kids and Calvin were to grab some hot thing, or if I were to be with my kids and or my family and someone were to get hurt, I feel like I would be able to, I feel like, you know, in a fight or flight, your body is like, what am I prepared to do? I think my brain would be like, you know what to do.
Just do the thing.
Just do the thing. And that felt good. That felt fun. And it was enjoyable. And like I said, I got to buy some new kit. I bought a pair of Leatherman Raptor shears.
You did buy some baller shears. The problem is with buying baller shears is that like after you use shears, you don't want to keep them.
Oh, sure. Well, these things are cool. So I like having them and they weren't that expensive. So.
I have gone through like a couple dozen. Every time I use a pair of shears, I just get a new pair.
Do you get them for free?
No, I do have to buy shears.
Yeah, well,
but they're cheap.
I bought a pair, and I got a great deal on them. And
I use them a lot, though.
You cut people's clothes off a lot.
Yeah,
yeah. I imagine I will never use these to cut people's clothes off, but
and save them for only that purpose.
If I need them, I will have them. Yeah. That's all I got, Andrew. Anything else you want to add before we go?
Buy the good shit and be ready to use it. I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. If you want to go to our website, it's watchclicker.com. If you want to follow us on social media, it is at watchclicker or at 40and20_watchclicker, both on Instagram. If you want to support this show and the Watch Clicker /40and20 operation, you can do that on Patreon. Patreon.com/40and20. Look, guys, that's how we get the money to keep this thing going. It's not an insignificant amount of money. Yeah. Patreon.com/40and20. That is how you support us. If you haven't, well, just check it out. Just check it out. Kick a buck. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of Watches, Food, Drinks, Life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.